this is Peter Basaldis. You're listening to White Line Fever. What a great show it is. Sitting back, listening to a bit of Akka Dakka, some Whitesnake, some LA Guns. That's what we want to hear. That's what we like to listen to get ourselves fired up as well when we're about to watch a great game of rugby league. White Line Fever, how good is it?
Welcome to episode 7, and I'm here with a very, very special guest. It's Kevin Hero, former Manly and Wigan star, who's now running rugby league in the Cook Islands, and we're watching Cook Islands national team play a Prime Minister's 13, Kevin, and obviously you wish it was the Kiwis they were playing.
Yeah, obviously we do, mate. That was a bit of a blow, you know, when the Kiwis pulled out 8 days ago, but hey, gave our other young fellas a chance to have a hit out against, you know, our pro team, and mate, they've been playing well.
What are the circumstances surrounding the cancellation in the game? Happened quite suddenly, and understandably a few people here in Rarotonga are still a bit unhappy about it, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at all three Warriors grades making the final, and you look at the Kiwi makeup now, I think nine Warriors made the Kiwis, and they felt they should basically come up short with players, and they had other injuries and concerns, and other players with club commitments, and so, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think they wanted to send a half-strength side up or sort of cap non-Kiwi players just for the sake of, you know, getting a game in.
So how's the sport of rugby league going here? I mean, you seem very well organised. You had a tri-series involving home-based players, New Zealand-based players and Australian-based players, and that's how you picked this Prime Minister's 13, but rugby league seems to have a very, very high profile here.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely the highest spectator sport on the island. You know, you've also got your soccer and your rugby union, but we are the only code that boasts 7 senior teams, and one of those teams is from the outer island, so that sort of gives you an idea of you know, how league band you know, the Cook Islands are.
Yeah, and you're already in the World Cup, which is good news, and you've got a very strong team out here tonight, so you're fairly confident putting together a pretty strong side for England and England and Wales, isn't it, 2013?
Absolutely. You know, you've got all these young fellas out here who, you know, there's probably average age of 23, with the exception of Carl Timothy, who's 33. Byron Ford, 28. The rest are all under 23. So, you know, if we can keep this nucleus of this team together, 2013 will be looking pretty strong.
Kevin, you're also involved in the International Federation. I mean, there's been talk of having a Pacific All-Stars this time next year, playing against England. Are you involved in that? Do you think it's going to happen? Are the NRL clubs still objecting to that idea? How much do you know about it?
Oh, I'm not sure. You know, the idea has been bandied around on many occasions, you know, and probably the last 5-6 years since I've been on the Federation, and we've just formalised the Asia-Pacific Rugby League Federation this year, so they'll obviously have a big part to play in any such game. But at this stage, yeah, it's hearsay, and you know, it'd be good. It's a good concept, but you know, whether it has the legs and whether or not, you know, the NRL clubs want to release players for it, is another story.
A big hot topic in rugby league over the last 48 hours is Rangi Chase's selection for England. How do you think international qualification should work? Because people have got widely varying opinions, haven't they? Some people get annoyed by players switching countries all the time. Other people realise that developing countries need access to Australian, New Zealand players who miss out on selection. What changes in an ideal world would you make to international qualification?
Well, I think the league's got it right, actually, for the size of the game. You know, when you look at a global scale, the league's not a big game. So if you're going to be too stringent on the rules, and, you know, you're going to have a lot of stars be left out of World Cups and big tournaments, and that's not no good for you know, any country, particularly the game of rugby league. You know, the fact is, and everyone knows, it's the three big countries, and it's sort of the smaller nation's job to try to get up to that level, and you know, to bring about sort of an evenness in the international footy arena. And I think with the Pacific Islands, you know, that's very achievable in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
One more question I've always wanted to ask. You and your brother seem to pronounce your surname differently. You're Kevin Hero and he's Tony Ira. How does that work?
Oh, I think it's just the country we live in, you know. I think it's easier for the Kiwis to say Iro, whereas you're in the islands, it's Iro, because that's how you know, that's how you pronounce it. So, yeah, we grew up in New Zealand as Iro, but obviously I live here now, so I'm an Iro.
Congratulations on all the work you've done here, Kevin.
Cheers, mate.
And here on White Line Fever, we love Chicken Foot. Here's another Chicken Foot song. It's called A Different Devil, off the new album 3, which is actually their second album.
There's a wise old tale about the same old hell. Only the devil has changed. With two brand new lovers rolling in the covers, everybody wants some strange. We all know somebody gonna tell.
Okay, we're back with Scott and Rob from Anthrax, and we're talking about the new album, which is either Worship Music or Worship Music. now, it's got a cohesive vibe to it, hasn't it? It sort of sticks together. It's not just a bunch of songs. Now, this is one of those obvious questions I'm sure you've answered four or five times today, but was there an approach? Is that an accidental sort of outcome, or was there an approach there, a theme?
You mean like the actual sequencing of the album? You know what, Charlie and I actually separately, I sent him my idea for a sequence and he wrote me back his idea, and I think we were like one song off from each other without having ever spoke about it the way we had it laid out. And it just, it was an easy sequence. Sometimes sequencing and figuring out how the album's supposed to flow is really difficult. And I felt like this record, just from, you know, listening to it and living it with so long, it made it easy for us because the songs told us, in a sense, this is how we're supposed to go to tell the story that you're trying to tell. And it does really fit together really well. It is cohesive, and it just works.
It's an album. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think has gotten lost over the years with music, you know, in general, is the art of making an album, which basically was started with the Beatles, but it's been lost, you know. It's like, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons why the music business got flipped around, because, you know, you put your money down to buy a CD or buy a record, and you know, one song is good and the rest of the record sucks. It's like, well, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? You know, and years ago, like all the classic records, it's the same kind of thing. You listen to the whole album top to bottom, and you can't just listen to one song. And I think with this new Anthrax record, Worship Music, it's the same kind of thing. It's an album. It's a complete picture. You know, it's a statement.
There was a time when people thought the album was dead and that everyone was just going to put out songs as soon as they finished recording it. I mean,
some bands are doing that. That there is that model right now where some bands are like just releasing songs, you know, and putting them out, you know, whether digitally or whatever. Like, I mean, I know Rush has had what, two songs out now for a while, you know. Like, there's something to be said for that, but at the same time, which, you know, it's not that we're fighting against the future, because we embrace technology. We certainly embrace coming up with new business models to make things work in a business that's, you know, basically cannibalized itself. But I could speak for Rob, and I think the whole band, when I say this, we all feel really strongly about making albums, a complete album. The idea of just like doing one song or two songs, and then, you know, maybe 8 months later another one song or two songs, I don't know, it's just not... That works for me. That works in pop music, singles-driven type of music. It's not like... For me, metal has always been about complete records. And I guess, you know, I'm kind of set in my ways, I guess, when it comes to that.
Years ago, I mean, the funny thing is that's how everything was started with, you know, record companies and artists back in the day. It's like it was all singles. And like I said, the Beatles really pioneered the album, you know, the start to finish. This is where we're at right now. This is our statement, you know. And, you know, obviously that evolved, you know, bands in the heavier, you know, side of things, like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and all these other bands throughout the years, Van Halen, AC/DC, Metallica, Anthrax, just kind of evolved into this thing. And it's just recently that I feel like I said earlier, the art of making albums is kind of, it's getting lost. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, these bands. It happens more so in the pop rock genre, but these bands are just chasing their tails, looking for hit songs, and the labels as well. They're signing bands based on one song rather than developing an artist,
right?
You know? And that's a huge thing, and that's definitely hurt the music business, you know, exponentially.
You would... Talking earlier about someone asked you about fans and their expectations and whether you just do what they tell you. But I mean, what about the whole sort of backlash thing with labels and what is thrash and what isn't thrash? And, you know, Metallica obviously have had, you know, times in their career where their hardcore fans have said they're sold out, and probably every band has. I mean, does being in the Big Four give you the freedom to say, well, we can do whatever we want because we're there, then no one's going to kick us out of the Big Four? You know what I mean?
Every band should have the problems Metallica's had of selling out. Boy, it really affected them. I'll tell you, when the seven fans who didn't like, you know, who said they sold out, you know, I you know, it's amazing to me. I understand the attitude. I mean, I come from a place where I will admit there was times in the 80s where, I mean, you know, look, it was like thrash or die. That was it. Like, it was either you played this type of music or you didn't. Everything else was posers. You know what I mean? I used to be that guy. And then I grew up at some point, and my mind expanded, and I started listening to all kinds of music. And what's funny is, before I was in Anthrax and we started playing the music we started playing, as a kid in the 70s, I listened to all kinds of music. I loved disco when it came out, even though people were like, disco sucks. But I loved disco. Like, it was cool. It was another version of funk and soul and, you know. Anyway, but then I got into this metal band and this thrash metal thing, and you just become very fascist in your ways. But then that ended again at some point, because it is very confining. Like, why? It would be boring for me to do the same thing over and over again. It's just not the type of human I am. So, you know, when it comes to the whole sellout thing, I understand the fans' point of view, because I've been there with many bands that I love. Look, it was hard for me. I still, to this day, have never even really accepted Sammy Hagar and Van Halen. I'm strictly a David Lee Roth guy. It's like, nope, I don't like it. It's too radio for me. I only like the David Lee Roth version. You know, like, whatever. I get it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, if you're truly a fan of a band, it's almost like if you love them, then set them free. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the way I look at it, you know. You just have to, you have to let artists be artists. And being a part of the Big Four, no, it's not like, yeah, I guess you can't say someone's not going to get kicked out of the Big Four. We just are who we are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if, like, if worship music was like a progressive jazz record, you know, we would still be part of the Big Four. Our shows, we'd probably not go over so well, but we would still be part of the Big Four.
So is there anything you wouldn't do? Like, you're in the studio and someone does something and you go, no, that's not Anthrax. You can't do it. Is there anything?
I'll say this. As far as, you know, the Big Four goes, I think the reason why these bands are still around and still relevant today is because they never followed the trends and all the bullshit. It was like they reinvented their own wheels. You know what I mean? And that's why they're still relevant and still, it's the real deal. You know, it's not like copycat music. Each one of those bands has their own sound and their own voice, and, you know, obviously they're bands that copy the bands that are on the Big Four bill, but, you know, this is the real deal, and that's why it's still around today and it's still relevant, you know.
Okay, we'll play another song and come back and wind it up, but what do you want to play?
Let's play In the End. What's up? This is Scott Ian.
This is Rob Caggiano of Anthrax, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back. It's the final segment of the show, and I've got Phil Wilkinson here from the Wigan Observer and Rugby League Week, a colleague of mine at Rugby League Week, and I know he'd love to be here in Cabo because he loves his rock and roll. He would have loved to have been at the Chickenfoot show last night. Have you heard the new Chickenfoot record yet?
Mate, I've not heard it yet, but I'm sure I'll see your reviews and then download it.
I'm sure you'll pay to download it. You'll download it completely legally. Now, there's a lot happening. We had Kevin Ero on at the start of the program. He was talking about what's happening in the Cook Islands, but plenty of other things happening in rugby league this week, including Des Hasler announcing he's leaving Manly in a couple of years, and Jeff Tudy will take over for him then. So that's massive news in Australia. But also we had the Super League Grand Final, and your boys, Wigan, weren't there. But what about Leeds winning? Big shock. Do you think they turned the corner at Wembley by not getting flogged?
Mate, absolutely I do, yeah, because people have said that Wembley is, it can tire you and fatigue you. But, mate, it had the opposite effect on Leeds. It had that effect on Wigan. They just didn't look the same side after they won the Challenge Cup. But Leeds just seem to use that as motivation. And I've never seen them play better all year as they did in the last few weeks, and they really did. As you say, turn the corner, and they didn't lose a game after that Challenge Cup final. And some of the teams they knocked off, mate, in that playoff run. I mean, coming from fifth, no side's ever done that before from over here. No side from outside the top three has even made the grand final from over here. And yet, some of the performances they put in, Warrington in the semi-final, and then especially St Helens in that final, it was a terrific late run from them.
Some of the crowds in the playoffs were pretty disappointing, weren't they? Do you think everyone there has accepted the playoff formula, given that, as we know, soccer doesn't have the playoffs? And do people really think of Leeds as champions, or do you think there's a section of the community that think of them just as the winners of what I saw described as the Sky Cup by winning the playoffs? Or do you think that they are generally accepted by everyone as the champions?
No, I wouldn't say that they're really accepted by everyone. No, you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of the rugby league fans of each club can accept that Leeds are champions. I've not heard any real complaints about what from Warrington fans or Wigan fans that Leeds aren't the champions. A few grumbles about whether the playoff system is fair and whether it rewards teams who finished high up the ladder, who finished first and second. But mate, as I said, this is the first time a team from outside the top three has made the grand final. So historically, it obviously does favour the sides who finish higher up the ladder. And the people, just on the point about the champions, the people who raise the ladders the most are the people who aren't the rugby league fans, the kind of the soccer fans or the union fans, who just kind of keep a passing interest in this sport and watch the big games. And so while they enjoyed the grand final and I'm sure kind of can appreciate the fairy tale run that Leeds went on, it doesn't sit comfortably with them that a team that finishes fifth in the ladder can be called the champions, because they've grown up, it's inbred in the psyche that it's first past the post, and so for a side to finish fifth, after already seeing comparisons with Premier League soccer, where you said, what if a team who finished fifth, Man City or Spurs, what if they were called champions at the end of the year when Man United had dominated so much? So it does, some people still do struggle to kind of fully grasp this concept.
What about the England Four Nations squad? Any surprises there, Phil?
Make quite a few surprises. I mean, when the squad was named, everyone expected to be talking about the overseas players who are in there, because it's quite, You know, I know the cricket side and the rugby union side do that, but rugby league has kind of resisted that in the past. You know, we've been one or two in there, but never before have you had such an influx of influence from, you know, Randy Chase for Kiwi and Chris Hyington and Jack Reid as well, who have got the ties to England, admittedly. But everyone thought that would be the debating issue yesterday when the squad was made. No, it completely wasn't. It was all on Ryan Bailey and John Wilkin. These two folks, mate, they can't stand each other. And John Wilkin, the St Helens player, he had some pretty nasty comments to say about Bailey after the grand final. He called him an embarrassment as a human being as well as a rugby league player. He said he's a child in a man's body. He said, I've got no respect for him whatsoever. And then just, you know, 24 or 48 hours later, they were both named in England squad, and so they will meet up tomorrow for the first time down in Loughborough. And I tell you what, I would pay to be a fly on that wall.
That's incredible. It's an incredible, incredible story. Now this is the bit where you get to play a song. You can close the show. I know I won't put any ideas in your mind, but I know you do like that new Mr. Big record. So anyway, pick a song.
Oh, mate, put me on the spot, why don't you? mate, just for you, then I'll go for a Mr. Big track, but I won't go for To Be With You, and I won't go off for a new record either. I'll go for one off the Lean Into It album. Go for Daddy Brother Lover Little Boy.
Awesome, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, Phil. Thanks for coming on White Line Fever.
No worries, mate, anytime.